A well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Paul Vallone of Grassroots North Carolina about the prospects for constitutional carry or permitless carry in North Carolina. The legislation has passed out of both the House and Senate. We are now awaiting a veto from Governor Josh Stein, and then we will see if a veto override attempt can be successful. But before we get to that, we do have to talk about what happened yesterday afternoon. The Senate Finance Committee releasing its language for the One Big Beautiful Bill, and included in the Senate Finance Committee on the reconciliation bill language would be provisions that would remove short-barreled rifles, short-barreled shotguns, quote, any other weapons as defined by the National Firearms Act from the NFA. Now, there's been some confusion about what this language does and doesn't do, so I want to quote directly from NRA's Institute for Legislative Action and the alert that they sent out yesterday afternoon. They said, late last month, the U.S. House passed a version of the reconciliation bill, which included Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act, which would remove suppressors from the National Firearms Act. In the portion that was released by the U.S. Senate, they've included provisions of the SHORT Act, which is sponsored in the U.S. Senate by Senator Roger Marshall of Kansas, as well as several conforming amendments that would help ease confusion arising from removing these items from the NFA. The new language would not only remove the onerous $200 federal excise tax, registry, and paperwork currently imposed on suppressors, but would also remove those same requirements for short-barreled rifles, short-barreled shotguns, and, quote, any other weapons as defined by the NFA. So I know that some folks have said, okay, wait, so the excise tax is going away, but the registration requirements are still in place? That does not appear to be the case. As with the suppressor language, once you remove the tax, you remove the need for the registry, because the registry is simply, it's not a registry of who owns these items. It's a registry of who paid the tax. So there's no tax to be paid. There's no need for a registry. So short-barreled rifles, short-barreled shotguns, quote, any other weapons will be treated as any other firearm. Just like suppressors, by the way. I know that the gun control groups have been saying, oh, you can just, you know, walk and buy them off the shelf. No, you can't do that. But they would be treated as a regular firearm. So if you go to a retailer, you pass a NICS check, you can purchase those items, walk out the door with them, so long as you don't live in a state with a waiting period. NRA ILA says, in addition, the new conforming amendments would prevent states that regulate NFA items from imposing restrictions based on existing state laws that require federal registration. In other words, there's no more need for federal registration, then those state laws would no longer be valid. As the Institute for Legislative Action notes, this new language would be a massive victory for NRA members and law-abiding gun owners everywhere, but the U.S. Senate is still considering changes to the bill, and your senators need to hear from you. The Senate hotline is 202-224-3121. If you want to contact your senator and urge them to keep these provisions that were included by the Senate Finance Committee in the text of the reconciliation bill that we voted on the Senate floor. And then, of course, you know, this goes back to the House for one more vote. I'll be honest with you. I am concerned about the House, because I think there's a reason why the SHORT Act was not included in the House language. We talked about this with Representative Andrew Clyde, who said, you know, he wanted to see that language included. But it was basically, we're going to get as much as we can and then go from there. So I know that there's going to be lobbying for some of those holdouts in the House who may feel like this language goes too far. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Right now, again, the most important thing is ensuring that this language stays in the One Big Beautiful Bill as it heads to the Senate floor. And for that to happen, again, we need to be contacting and in contact with our senators. Even my two Democratic senators I'm going to contact, I know that there's no chance that they're going to vote for this language, but I am going to reach out and contact them and let them know that at least one of their constituents wants them to do the right thing here and treat these items, again, as ordinary firearms, not any sort of restricted items under the NFA. All right, so with that good news in hand, let's talk about something that could be very good news. The 30th permitless carry state in the union. In order to make that happen, though, we're going to need a lot of grassroots activism and probably a little bit of luck as well, as we discussed with Paul Vallone, head of Grassroots NC. Take a look and a listen. Paul, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again, sir.
Well, thank you for having me, Ken.
Absolutely. And congratulations on the legislative passage of permitless carry in North Carolina.
Well, we've gotten it further than it's ever gotten before. We've now gotten it through both chambers. It's now on the governor's desk. God help us.
Yeah. So let's get right to it, because now the fun, quote unquote, really begins, right? We know that Governor Stein is going to veto this bill. I think now the first question is, when is he going to do it, right? He has issued some vetoes, issued some over the weekend, but he did not veto permitless carry. Do you think he's going to hang on to this bill for as long as possible to shorten the window of opportunity for a veto override?
He may hang on to it, but practically speaking, it won't make any difference.
Okay.
I believe they can override for as long as they're in the session. If he hangs on to it, if he doesn't do anything for more than 10 days, then it becomes law, which he will not allow to happen.
So he's got a window.
I guarantee if he's anything like our last anti-gun governor, he will wait till the last day and then veto it then.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So he's got a limited time to act here. So then the question becomes, can we override the governor's veto? You know, you and I have talked about the math before. Republicans are one vote shy of a supermajority in the House, but we also saw two Republicans vote against permitless carry. So that changes the equation a little bit as well. Let's talk about those Republicans if we can, Paul. Were you surprised to see their objections to permitless carry?
Yes. Well, I mean, Ted Davis has a long history of being a rhino and voting against gun issues, although in recent years he has voted with us. I thought maybe we had reformed him, but apparently now he's gone off the deep end. He and Bill Brisson, another North Carolina House Republican. I'm happy to say that those guys, their worlds are lighting up today. We have run a little feedback day on them, on which we're asking people to call them between 9 and 11 today. And before we get off here, I'll be happy to give the phone number to everyone around the country to call them and give them their opinion.
Okay, now just keep in mind that this won't air until after 11 a.m. Eastern, so...
Our opinion is that even if people can't call them during the period of time, call them anyways whenever they can.
Okay.
So we're putting rather intense grassroots pressure on those two legislators right now. We'll see what happens. But any way you look at it, we're going to make an impression on the General Assembly. We're going to let them know that in no uncertain terms that we intend to pass constitutional or permitless carry as soon as possible.
Do you think that is achievable this year? Is it possible, you think, to override the governor's veto?
At this point, I'd say probably we're about maybe 40-60.
Okay.
We'll see what happens. But we have had some legislators who were going to walk on the vote who are now not walking, who actually voted with us for Senate Bill 50. We did have a number that were not present, some of whom had an excused absence for legitimate things. So we are hoping that we will be able to get those people into the General Assembly and to vote for the bill.
Okay.
Vote for the override, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I mean, it's not just about the math in terms of, you know, if everybody is present, here's what the numbers look like. As you say, they're going to be members who may not be there for that vote, and that'll obviously change the equation.
Well, leadership should time the vote such that they vote when our votes are present and the opposition votes are not.
Okay.
And they've had the interest to the veto. They just hold the bill until the numbers are right and the requisite number of Democrats are out at the dentist or whatever, and then they run the thing rather quickly. We're not out of the game yet.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's hope that I don't know, maybe there's some free ice cream offered up to Democrat lawmakers one afternoon, and they can go get their freebies. And I've heard the objections. I know that some of these House members talked about it's honestly, Paul, it's amazing to me. We've got 29 states that have already adopted this. This is the law of the land of more than half the country, and yet the debate in North Carolina, it's like you all be the first state in the union to pass
I
this, right? They're talking about, oh,
know.
crime's going to go up. What happens if we let people carry without a permit? Well, you've got 29 examples to look at. I've been writing about what's going on in Louisiana quite a bit. They passed permitless carry last year, went into effect on July the 4th. New Orleans right now is on pace to have its lowest number of homicides, I think, in recorded history.
Excellent.
I mean, it's amazing, right? Homicides have
Yep.
dropped, I think, something like 34% this year compared to last year. And homicides dropped last year too after permitless carry took effect. It was a 48% decline in homicide. So the idea that permitless carry automatically makes a state a dangerous place, automatically means that dangerous people can carry guns. I mean, those are all fallacies.
Well, I've often said that we've reached a point in American political debate where, unfortunately, facts don't matter. You listen to a legislative debate on the floor, on the chamber floor, and it is, at least from the other side, completely devoid of facts. They pull statistics out of places the sun doesn't shine, and completely false, completely unverifiable. And so, yeah, this is unfortunately the left lies. It's what they do.
Well, and that means we got to get active, right? And we've got to talk not only to our lawmakers, we've got to talk to our friends and our neighbors, convince them not to oppose this legislation so they're not making phone calls saying, hey, a vote to sustain this veto. Where should, again, you talked about giving those numbers. So where should people be directing their legislative comments and contacts right now?
Right now, we would like everyone to call, and we don't care where they're from. Call Representative Ted Davis at 919-733-5786. And also Representative Bill Brisson at 919-733-5772. Again, 919-733-5772.
All right, and I will add, don't be a jackass, don't be angry, don't give them any ammunition that they can then bring to the media and say, listen, we're getting threats, things of that nature. That's not helpful, right? You simply want to
Absolutely
call, you want
correct.
to say, do the right thing, protect our rights, enhance our rights, and override the governor's veto here.
As we've said, I defy anyone to name an individual civil right where you need a governmental permit to exercise that right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Paul Vallone with Grassroots North Carolina. As always, my friend, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
My pleasure, sir, as always. Thank you.
My thanks to Paul for joining us on the program, and we will be keeping a very close eye on what is going on there in North Carolina in the hopes of getting that permitless carry across the finish line. All right, now let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day. Our recidivist report will start there with a case out of the Denver area. Man sentenced in connection with separate shootings that killed stepfather and injured teen. Mark Cisneros accused of shooting a 17-year-old while he was out on bond in connection with the fatal shooting of his stepfather. The sentence for Mark Cisneros, who's 20 years old, 15 years probation. He was also given a suspended sentence of 10 years in prison, which he will not have to serve if he successfully completes probation. So accused of shooting two people, one of them fatally, and 15 years probation. I'm amazed by this. He was arrested in October of 2023 after the fatal shooting of his stepfather, 38-year-old Elijah Massey. While he was out on bond after that shooting, he was arrested in connection with a shooting that injured a 17-year-old, according to Aurora Police. Channel 9 News in Denver says that Cisneros pleaded guilty to one count of attempted murder for the October 23, 2023 shooting, and a second-degree murder charge was dismissed as part of the plea agreement. So he pled guilty to one count of attempted murder for the fatal shooting. And then for the second shooting where the 17-year-old was shot, he pleaded guilty to one count of conspiracy to commit murder, but an attempted murder was dismissed as part of the plea agreement. Now, Channel 9 News doesn't quote any prosecutor about why this deal was offered or made. There's part of me that wonders, okay, was there some sort of element of self-defense in these shootings? Or are things really just so wackadoo crazy in Colorado that you can murder somebody and walk away with probation? I don't know what the answer to that question is. Both of them honestly sound pretty plausible. If Cisneros really was acting in self-defense, why didn't prosecutors simply drop the charges? Were they concerned that there was not enough evidence to get a conviction? And Cisneros maybe was claiming self-defense. I mean, that's a possibility. But again, a sentence that results in no prison time for an attempted murder. And again, murder charges dropped. There at least needs to be some explanation and accountability on the part of the prosecutors here to help the public understand why such a seemingly sweetheart deal was offered to somebody who shot two people in the span of from October 2023 to May 2024, let's say less than a year. I don't get it. And I would love to hear what the DA there has to say. And today's Armed Citizen story, this one I got to say, it happened a couple weeks ago, but I missed it. And I was reading the Daily Signal's roundup of defensive gun uses, and I wanted to just bring this to y'all's attention, since, you know, a little more than a decade ago, we wouldn't have stories like this out of Chicago, because, well, it was illegal to possess a handgun, and then it was illegal to carry a handgun. Both of those things are now untrue, thanks to the efforts of Second Amendment advocates. And so we get headlines like this: woman shot during argument and fight with another woman on Chicago's South Side. Now, the headline itself is a little deceptive because it doesn't mention any sort of self-defense element, even though that was why someone got shot. As a CBS in Chicago reports, what started as an argument in the Kenwood neighborhood on Chicago's South Side ended up with one woman shot and another beaten. Police say a 46-year-old woman got into an argument with a man and a woman. During that argument, the man and woman began hitting the victim in the face. That's when she pulled out a gun and fired shots. The 33-year-old woman was shot twice in the left armpit, was taken to a local hospital in good condition. The 46-year-old woman, who CBS reported had a valid FOID card, no mention of a concealed carry license, suffered bruises to the face from the attack, refused medical attention, and the man and the woman who attacked the victim were taken into custody with charges pending. We'll see if we can find an update for you, because it has been a couple of weeks there. But again, does not appear that the woman who shot her attackers charged with any sort of crime. And finally today, our good deed of the day: in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Some folks in Lynn, Massachusetts, who came to the aid of neighbors when the house on Bullfinch Street caught fire. You can see the picture there from the, this is from the Item Live newspaper. Jorge Robles, one of the residents of the home, said, "My wife called me and said her house is on fire." He said by the time he got there, there were more than 20 cars in front of his house. It was hard to find a place to pull over to even see his home. When he got there, he said he saw his brother yelling upstairs, "Everybody get out of the house, it's on fire." Jim Harkins is a neighbor to, I guess there were multiple houses that were affected by the blaze, but the house that, you know, originally caught on fire. He said his son Jason Harkins and his nephew, a guy named Paul LaRoque, took action when they saw what was going on. Harkins said Jason said that looks like too much smoke. When they got in front of the house, they witnessed people who were screaming for help from a second-story window. And Jim Harkins said that his son Jason and his nephew Paul LaRoque pulled 10 people out of the windows before the fire department arrived. Only one person suffering injuries. 9 other people evacuated the home without needing emergency medical assistance. Harkins said his son and nephew each pulled 5 people from 2 windows of the house. He said that after the 10 people were evacuated, his son Jason then went into adjacent homes, banging on doors, ringing the doorbell, trying to get people out of the home. He said they got everybody out of the house and had to leave because it was too hot, but not before rescuing the family dog and cat. Linda Harkins who is Jason's mom, said, "We heard explosions. It was the tires of the cars in the driveway that were blowing up because of the intense heat." She said, "I've never seen anything go up in flames so fast." Kathy Fuller, who is Linda Harkin's sister, also there to help evacuate people from the surrounding homes. She said that she had no hair left on her arms because of the heat from the flames. So, I mean, again, this could have been a terribly tragic situation. There are folks who, again, who are looking for a new place to live right now. But their lives are, if not intact, they are still there. And again, only one person suffering injuries because of the quick thinking and the fast action of people like Jason Harkins, Paul LaRocque, Kathy Fuller, in the right place at the right time. And again, willing and able to do the right thing to help some neighbors in need. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I really do appreciate it. Looking forward to being back with you again tomorrow. We might be delving more into the Senate language here in the One Big Beautiful Bill. Talk about, again, what it means, what it doesn't mean. But I think it means quite a bit. And most importantly, again, how we can make this possibility, make this suggestion become law here in the next couple of weeks. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Delving into history as well, because today is the 250th anniversary of the Battle of Bunker Hill. We've got a piece for you at Bearing Arms coming up this afternoon about that. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. You will get all kinds of great benefits at every level of support, but you'll also be helping the independent pro-segment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms, and we greatly appreciate all that you're doing to help defend our freedom and help keep us going, fighting against the big tech censorship and the lies of the anti-gun crowd. Have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.